Welcome to another edition of the Gelsnet podcast, the independent Rangers podcast by fans for fans, with all the content is absolutely free. Coming to you in association with Forest Precision Engineering. I'm your host tonight, Brian Archer. As always, we would encourage you to get onto the Gelsnet website and check out our forums for all your latest Rangers news and discussion. We're live tonight on the YouTube channel, and we would ask that you continue to share the pod on social media, spread the word, and please subscribe to the YouTube channel. Before I introduce my guest for tonight, and I give another mention to our partners over at Forest Precision Engineering, they're a Glasgow-based engineering company who have been a big commercial supporter of Rangers for a number of years, and we're delighted to have them supporting the pod. If you want more information about them, please visit their website at www.forestprecisionenge.com. They also have a stunning executive lounge in the Ibrox main stand. And for more information on that, email the club at hospitality@rangers.co.uk. Right, now to bring in my guest, joining me tonight is Alex Anderson. Alex, I think you're just back from a bit of sightseeing. How are you doing?
No bad, mate. Was that the Jingle Punks there? Was that the ditch digging? I saw them at Glasgow Apollo in 1980. Absolutely fantastic. It's absolutely different class. Different class. They're a great band. Absolutely fantastic. I was over talking the music. I was over in the Nashville, Tennessee, putting the first syllable back into country and Western music. And thanks to Rangers for just, slap. I get back last Friday. I thought it was just the jet lag, but it's Rangers just getting me thoroughly back down to earth with the last couple of results. But I want to apologise to anybody who watched my post-match reaction pod the other night. That wasn't just jet lag. That was Rangers kicking me right in the home was. It was really, really slow. So I've had a wee... But a guy of my age, I just had a cup of tea there and a couple of the McGee's tart. Now you get the 4-packs McGee's with you get the pineapple cake and you get strawberry tart and you get the wee cherry to the bake well and that as well. That was me. So I just, it used to be a couple of lines of coke after the pert buttocks of a Filipino bellboy in Fire Island. But now it's just a couple of, it's get that in there and that's me. I'm ready. That's my naloxone for the night. I'm ready to go. How's yourself, mate? How are you doing?
I'm doing well, apart from obviously, as you say, the last couple of results have not been anything to cheer us up, but that's about it. Bit of a shame for you coming back from your holiday and then having to watch the last two results.
Usually it's like, Alec, don't talk about holidays. There's nothing more boring than somebody talking about their holidays. It's like talking about their dreams or something like that. But I think everybody listening tonight would be quite happy if I just went on an endless recap of all the meals I had and all the roads I was driving instead of having to talk about Rangers. But we're going to do it. We're going to try and get this road back on the show, as they say, mate. So let's do it.
Unfortunately, even when our teams don't turn up, we'll turn up and talk about it instead. First thing I wanted to get your take on was the team selection. There was a few surprises for me yet again. Sterling comes back in at left back and Roof making a surprise start up front. Did that surprise you at all?
Roof starting was a slight surprise. I think it was always a possibility, especially after Mr. Dessers had those couple of misses against Ross County the previous game. I think we were all doing the arithmetic and thinking if he pits the two of them away, then we win the game. easy to say. Everybody's at fault when we lose these kind of games, especially in that kind of fashion. But I wasn't totally blown away by the fact that Kamar Roof was coming in. And I think we've known with Kamar that, he scored the last time we played, the previous time we played in Dingwall, scored our only winner on Spanish soil against Spanish opposition. So when he comes in, when he does actually play for us, it only takes him a couple of games usually to get his eye back in. So I wasn't terribly surprised, but it was maybe a slightly off the wall change, that one. The other two, I was praying that it was going to be Sterling back in at left back, because Borna he's in Turkey or wherever it is he's gone. He has left the building spiritually, if not physically. And I know there was other places we wanted to be playing Dujon, but I think that was the most needful. And what was the other change? I was really happy. I'm going to go on and talk about how we're being too hard on the players just now, but being honest, no offence to Kieran Dowell, but I was really happy that he wasn't playing in the sitting two alongside John Lundstrom, as opposed to being particularly delighted that it was Tom Lawrence. But he has played there a few times this season, done okay. Scored a really, what could still be a really important goal for us at Fir Park when playing in the sitting two at Christmas time there. But after his performance, or kind of non-performance on Sunday, I was really quite happy to see Tom Lawrence coming in and taking his place. But no, I can't say I was particularly surprised by the changes, and I'm not surprised in general when Philip Clement's team does have a lot of changes. Now, I wasn't one of those that was calling for, you know, the cancer at the heart of this team to be taken away. You know, the same guys that keep letting us down year on, year in, year out, even though, like, Lundstrom's only been there for 2.5 years. But I wasn't wanting with any of the guys. I think it's just needs must, and it was about the best team we could manage.
Yeah, we'll get onto that famous leadership group a bit later. Yeah. One man that never made the starting lineup and hasn't done for a number of weeks, and in fact has actually struggled for a place on the bench recently as well, is Nico Raskin. Now, there was calls from the lead up to the game for him to be given a large chance in midfield. I think people love the opinion that he might bring a bit more energy to that midfield than somebody like Lawrence or Dowell, but he just seems to be constantly being overlooked. His last start at Motherwell, the defeat to Motherwell, granted it didn't go well, but given that we've seen what he's capable of, are you surprised that he's not been given more of an opportunity? And where does this leave his Rangers future if, you know, he can't get a game now with Diamandi injured and Clement's essentially playing Tom Lawrence and Dowell ahead of him, who are two number 10s effectively? You know, if he can't get a game now, when can he get a game?
I think the run of form that we're on just now, or the lack of form, it's bringing back that old kind of maxim amongst the Rangers support, which is the best players are the ones that only get in a game. No, they must be better than this. But I do find it puzzling, but only because I thought Nico Raskin himself was better than that. He'd be better than that. He'd be able to do more. I don't think the manager for 1 second has, you know, got an agenda against him or anything like that. So for me, it's maybe Ben Davis, I think, as well, who's at times we've thought, Davis and Goldson maybe look like a kind of European standard centre half pair, and I think that lasted for a game and a half. I'd certainly felt that way at one point, and then it all went south. But no, I'm not really. I think we're going to talk about this later, obviously, what the problem is, what's caused this slump. But I feel that there's so many injuries and there's so many absentees, so much rotation of the squad, it's totally necessitated. The manager's trying to put together kind of Frankenstein players. Like when you throw in Sterling and his substitutions, a few times he's come on in one position and then moved to another position after coming on as a sub. Sometimes you're getting like three players playing one position in the course of 90 minutes for Rangers just now. So he would be using anybody who was up to speed. I think it's the same as what's happened with Scott Wright a few times. You think if he's not getting a game the way the team's playing just now, or the positions that available, he can't be up to it. He can't be doing it in training. The manager hasn't mentioned anything about fitness. We're asking. I think he's trying to paint it as the guy's trying to get back to full fitness. He's not a vindictive manager. Clement is very against what Clement to talk about, talking negatively in any way about the team. He's Mr. Positivity. But I think you just have to look at if he's not getting picked, something's going badly wrong for him, Raskin. He might have checked out. He might have completely checked out and be wanting to get back to Belgium or get another move, something like that. I hope he's going to, you know, screw the nut and become the player that he looked like he could become when he first arrived at Rangers. Scored in Clement's first game as well and charged it in that 4-0 win over Hibs. And you think if a Belgian manager can't get something out of him, then nobody can. So I'm worried for Raskin, but if he's not getting picked, I just don't think he can be up to it, mate.
He did seem like the type of player we could build that midfield around, so hopefully he gets back to that kind of form, because we know what a good player he can be when he's on form. In terms of the game itself, I find this difficult to analyse and talk about because not much actually happened, I don't think. Like, we created very little. We never looked like winning the game for me. I mean, it was all just so ponderous and a lack of any real urgency or intensity. You wouldn't think this team were in a trying to be in a title race,
wouldn't you? I think that's the problem with the kind of toxic reaction, which I don't blame anybody for. I'm not sitting here saying I was anything other than totally devastated the other night, but I felt as if, you're absolutely right, nothing, it wasn't happening. It just wasn't happening. We didn't get to the point. We were gradually getting more possession during the game. Maybe after about the half-hour mark in the first half, we started to look like we're getting more possession, but they played the whole game as if they were trying to get rid of it, as if what had happened at Ross County, what had happened up in Dingwall, had traumatised them. I don't know what happened in Dingwall. That's the one I really want to... what happened the first half against Celtic. We've all got these kind of cockeyed theories, you know, we've all got, because we're not getting the information. I don't think it would be conducive to good team spirit for the team going forward if we were to get the information, what exactly the problem was. But I think they're exhausted, if I'm quite honest. But the slow start against Celtic, and then that the slow start to be compounded against Ross County at Dingwall, but we never started in that game. I felt as if, though, the other night, against Dundee at Dens Park, they looked as if they'd been traumatised, like PTSD. I'm sorry if I'm repeating what I was saying in my post-match reaction the other night, but I'm suffering from a bit of PTSD myself about that performance. It seemed like they were just getting rid of the ball. The number of balls that get played forward by Conor Goldson, by John Souter, just to nobody. Into that, all we've been talking about for the last month is the grass at Dens Park, and that's what it seemed to be. The ball was just going to big dollops of grass at Dens Park. It was as if their first thought was, get rid, don't concede. I think that's maybe part of the manager
talking. It looked like they were traumatised by fear. I felt like they were traumatised by
absolutely,
fear.
Absolutely. And it was like, we can't concede three goals again. We can't get caught in the break again. And we did. That was, I think, a few times. Dundee always looked like we're ready to catch us in the break. That might be our own PTSD reading that into it. But they were hitting us in the break a few times. They got us in the first 40-odd seconds again, same as what happened up at Dingwall, same as what happened against Celtic. You know, the last two times hasn't resulted in a goal, but it's really bad. But I think on Wednesday night, it was more about the fact that they were just trying to get rid of the ball. They were just trying to keep a clean sheet more than anything else. And you end up, fans, understandably, are slagging Souter, slagging Goldson, slagging John Lundstrom for just hitting these long balls. They weren't getting to anybody, but I think it was all about clearing the lines, making sure they didn't concede, and B, there was no movement up front, there was nothing happening up front. What I was trying to say is we looked at constantly we're going to get caught in the counter-attack against Dundee, but yet we had nobody up front. We had nothing going on in midfield, and we weren't getting overloads, anything like overloads. It looked like we had nobody anywhere near the Dundee box for the majority of the game. So you're thinking, how could we be getting caught in the counter-attack? We've not got the ball up there or the bodies up there. It was just this looked like a performance full of fear. And that, for me, if you're clutching at straws, at least as a reaction, because the performance at Ross County just looked like, nah, who cares?
It looked like they were so traumatised by the defensive horror show at Ross County that they were so determined not to repeat that they lost all creativity.
Exactly.
It's almost like, in trying not to concede, they kind of went too far the other way and that's lost it. I think that's creative spark.
No fluidity at all, no combinations, no one-twos, no kind of underlapping or overlapping or anything. It just was very, very scared, you know, and that's, you know, fear is obviously going to totally constrict it. And I think the only thing you can take out of that is, I think at Dingwall it was like, why do they not look like they're in a title race? Why do they not look like they get what they're supposed to do? And I still think that can be excused slightly by the farce of the game at Dens Park being called off during the week. You know, having been given the go-ahead in the morning and then getting called off in that afternoon, even though we all knew it was going to happen, that is seriously messing about a team whose momentum is very fragile, given the manager was changed back in October. And it's the second time it's happened up there. And I think, I don't know, I think the strain and a tiredness for a lot of players we'll get onto is getting to them. But to me, it looked like there was no urgency up at Dingwall. And it looked like maybe there was actually too much urgency. They needed to lighten up and kind of get the pressure off their shoulders up at Dens.
Yeah, definitely.
For me,
it's not just these last two games. For me, our form's fallen off a cliff since the Motherwell defeat. I mean, you could argue we've not played particularly well since we beat Hearts at Ibrox 5-0. What would you put that down to, if anything, in terms of that? It just looks like everything good we were doing up to that point in the Hearts game, there was fluidity in our play. We could see what Clement was trying to do in terms of patterns of play, in terms of how he wanted his team to build up. There's none of that anymore. I honestly couldn't say that I know what a classic Rangers goal under Clement looks like anymore. Whereas that Hearts game is a perfect example of the style of play you wanted to implement, but it's all just kind of gone south since then.
Yeah, I think it's the players, it's the injuries they're catching up with, Brian. It's been I think if nothing else, this is why I can't be too hard on the team just now, because there's still a title to play for. But also the very fact that they got back into a title race, or they look like, I think just now we're really angry about the fact they've thrown away a massive, the potential for a lead to be keep, with a chance to go in front of Celtic, with the chance to get to within a point of Celtic. Then with that chance again, with the game in hand previously, them have absorbed the game in hand and only got a point from it. We're still only 3 points behind Celtic. You know, I know we've got to go to Parkhead, and if we continue this form, we'll be going to Parkhead to try and stop Celtic winning the league against us that day, clinching the actual title that day, if we continue in this form. But I feel as if Diamande coming back this weekend is a big thing for us, because I think we've just got to the stage where Diamande, even if you look at his performance second half against Celtic, getting us back into that game, getting the draw in that game, he goes out of the game. I'm wondering if that's... He gets injured in that game, has the operation in his thumb. He's not at Dingwall. And I'm wondering if John Lundstrom just think, I can't do this anymore. I need somebody... Diamandi's actually given me a bit. He's given me somebody to work with. We can do this together. We can do that thing of covering for the fullbacks. I've got to push really far. Joshua Barry in Rangers Review is really good in this, and I'm probably just plagiarising him without even knowing it, because I listen to his stuff and it's really good. But it's, if you watch Rangers with any kind of attention at all, you can see that we're having to push the fullback. That's why Bournemouth can't come back in, because if he's not in the game, if his mind's not, if he, his heart's not in it, it needs to be everything into him. Of Gittav, who's 32-year-old, playing every game of the season, and he's now having to push further up and do more, because we're lacking the creativity, because Ross McCausland's injured. You know, Seema's coming back. It was horrific that we lost Seema, and yet we did so well without him for so long. It was absolutely fantastic before he went off to AFCON and got himself injured. And even he's coming back. Finally, we've got him starting games again, and he's starting on the right side of the park, because we don't have the attacking players anywhere else. I think it's just caught the injuries. The manager has been working miracles. This thing when he goes into press conferences and it's like, I don't want to talk about the players that are injured, I want to talk about the players that are fit. That was quite stunning when I first heard it, but it bloody worked, you know, all through February. And it got to the point where it was so good that I wasn't even noticing. Seeing we lost to Motherwell, mate, I was like, right, they've taken their foot off the gas. They've got Cocky, they've got their eye on, we're playing Benfica on the Thursday night. You know, they've got their eye on that a bit. They start slow. It's difficult to catch back up if you start slow in a game. And then the Hibs game, well, we beat them 3-1 anyway, even though there was a few, you know, stops and starts in that game in the league. And that's got us to within a point of Celtic, and we've got them coming next week. I was like, it's fine. It's going to be fine. But that was, as you say, when you start looking at what was going wrong in their games and putting it what's happened all through the month of April so far, it's just going backwards. And I think they're exhausted. I think the players that are playing all the time are exhausted, and there's so much rotation and all that. And we lose Yilmaz, you lose Diamande after losing Cortez. It's just,
I think that's the one injury that's actually affected us more than we would probably like to admit, because he offered a bit of freshness when he came in. You could see there was a bit of vibrancy about him when he came in, and he offered a different dynamic. He could play on either side. He got his goal quite early doors. He was full of confidence.
And that game against Hearts.
Season-ending injury.
That game against Hearts where he scores, you end up, you know, and Shankland, that's my kind of... I'm always against this thing of there's just one problem, there's just one cure-all. I think there's always lots of different things at a club the size of Rangers if it's not going right. But Shankland, for me, I think... And I don't even know if it's even possible we're ever going to sign him. You know, we had the money, or if he even wanted to come to us or whatever. You know, everybody's got their own opinions about that. But even Majovski would have done for me at that point. I think we needed a goal scorer, needed somebody who could do something serious up front, something routine up front even. But that day when Hearts came to Ibrox, third place, the form team outside the Old Firm, we're 3-0 up at half time, beat them 5-0. This is us having gone top of the league the previous week, answering all the questions all through the month of February about Botto and all that. And then it's like, I mean, how can you handle it being top of the league? Well, we're a different class. And the three January signings made by Clement all scored that day as well, while Shankland, as his team's getting pumped 5-0, he still managed to hit the woodwork though, I think, in that game. But it seemed like this is perfect, we're going great guns. We go to Kilmarnock, it's a bit of a struggle, and we come through that, the infamous Rugby Park pitch, which has taken care of Celtic twice this season, so that was fantastic as well. So it has been going well, it has been good, but the minute we start, that was the night we lost Cortez, who was holding us together in the first half against Kilmarnock at Rugby Park. He was the one guy, it's no working, but I'm going to keep going. that we lost him, and then Yilmaz has been a revelation as well. Over the kind of, once it got to the kind of winter period, he was fantastic. I was having my doubts about him initially, but he was tremendous. We lose him, and Danilo, the last time he played at Dens Park, beat him 5-0. Danilo was sensational that night. He was really good. He's not a fully fit Kamar Roof type standard, but what a massive miss he is as well. We're getting to the point where even we're just forgetting about players that are injured because there's so many of them. And I think it just comes a point it's catching up with Brian.
Yeah, I think there might be something in that. Now, there's been a lot of talk recently about the famous leadership group in the dressing room. I think in the main, when people refer to the leadership group, they're referring to Tavernier, Goldson and Lundstrom. A lot of calls from that we dropped or moved on in the summer, a lot of blame seems to be being placed at their door for recent performances and, you know, some kind of perception around bottle and mentality. Where do you stand on this one? Can you see the manager dropping any of them for the remainder of the season? Should he? Or do you think there's maybe too much focus on that group of players?
I know there's maybe been something in it when it comes to Goldson recently. He's maybe had a few bad, a few bad genes. I know Tav's had a few bad genes defensively, but what Tav brings you everywhere else, and he's not a right back. This is the thing with James Tavernier. He is the essence of the way Rangers are supposed to play football since Mark Warburton at least was here. You know, we're going to have bigger players and more money than most of the teams we play against. Overload, and Tav is the kind of ham hock of overload that's flavouring your soup there. He is just the guy that starts the whole thing. He needs to go forward. This manager has.
My thing with Tav is we won't know how good he was until he's left.
I think the Tav thing it's become a hysteria. Like I love the film Heat, Michael Mann film. You know, De Niro and Pacino, all about bank. When the bank raid goes wrong, they get outside. The police are waiting for them. You know, Michael and who else gets killed? Didrio, he ends up dead. Anyway, a couple of guys get shot by the police outside because the police, and when they get back to Dr. Bob, Jeremy Piven, he's the backstreet doctor that looks after Chris Hairless, played by Val Kilmer, who's been wounded in his shoulder. He's picking the bullets at him, and De Niro's saying, right, how's he going to recover and all that? You know, I need to give him plenty of rest. He's not got time. We're on the run. Anyway, Chris says to Neil, who did it? Who sold us out? And he says, who wasn't there? And he's right, it was Trail, the getaway driver, he was breeding the guy that stepped in for him. He got killed as well by the police that day. So it's the guy that wasn't there. He's the guy that grassed him up. For a good reason, his wife was being tortured by these guys. And that. Anyway, but so that's what I think. It's who isn't there? It's no who is there. It's no who is there that's to blame. James Tavernier is 32 years old. And I know, I was saying this the other night, I know that's nothing in modern football. Goldson is 31, Lundstrom's 30 years old. That's no age, really, modern footballers looking after themselves, even at this level. But it is when you're not getting a break, when you're just not getting a break. And they are, Tav and Jack Butland, I think, played 51 games each. And there's no subs appearances for them. They're the two highest appearances. Oh, that's this season, 51 games each. Lundstrom is up there, I think, high 40s. I think maybe he's about 48 and Goldson's 47, but I think maybe Lundstrom's get more sub appearances. And I think we're going to be the same as Cyril Dessers because we've had to rely on him so much because we've hounded the Lammers at the place and Danilo's injured and what have you. We just don't have the strikers. So Cyril Dessers has to get played all the time. He's played like high 40s games as well, a lot more sub appearances. To take a. We're doing this thing where that's the same. You know, John Lundstrom, he has a good 3 or 4 months and then he'll let you down. And it's like to get 3 or 4 months out anybody at this point in time when we have players who can't come in for more than three games in a row. We have players who need a rest, are playing every second game and what have you. Ryan Jack, I've already mentioned Ryan Jack, he's like disappeared. These guys that are able to play every week and give us a minimal kind of, I know that people are talking about being spineless, which I find disgusting, but they are the spine. You need something to hang the rest of this team on. This kind of ever rotating, ever fluctuating, always injured team. You need someone to hang them on. And I think I was so glad when somebody asked Clement about it in today's press conference, implied this thing you see all over social media. They've let us down again. This same group of players will get every manager hunted. Number one, Steven Gerrard didn't get hunted. He got poached. Gerrard let them down, and that's only Goldson and Tavernier that have been there for them. And they've played under four managers in the space of 3 years. the fact that they're able to perform at all, have us in a European final, have us winning the Scottish Cup, have us challenging Celtic. We don't always chuck it at this time against Celtic. This is the first time we've been almost neck and neck with Celtic at this time of the season, including the season we won the league, the first time since 2011. You know, the first time for 13 years, because the season we won the league in 2021, 155, we cruised it. So we've not been in this situation. This determination that it's, they always let us down, this core group of players, and the manager said it today, most of this core group of players that always let us down have been here for 9 months. They can't always, it's physically impossible for them to always let you down, because only three of them have been here, you know, for any length of time. We got rid of Morelos, we got rid of Kent, we got rid of Glenn Kamara. You know, we get rid of all these players that we thought were letting us down. Or even Scotty Arfield and Steve Davis, who never get any bad reports, because you know, we all love them as well. They're away as well. I think it's just we feel permanently let down because we can't win the league. We're really frustrated. I don't blame anybody for that. We lash out. I do that thing where I go, no, it's no Tav. You know, how are you going to cure the fact we can't score enough goals by taking out the guy who scored, you know, over a goal every second league game this season? The other night was the first, it was only the second time in eight league games that Tav hasn't scored. But he makes so many mistakes. Doesn't he make that many mistakes? He's constantly scoring. It's the epitome of somebody who's trying. He scores when we're great. He scores when we're crap. He scored our last three goals at Parkhead in two games. We lost both those games. He steps up all the time. So I think it's just, I think it's a bit of a misnomer. I think it's totally understandable. But I do that thing where I'll stick up for the team. I'll lash out at other Rangers fans. And then I'll, you know, put the computer down. I'm absolutely fine. I'm cool. I'm totally phlegmatic. Then I'll go to Morrison's tonight and I'll go, fucking 129 for the pot noodle. That was 99 pence last week. I want to talk to that manager. Get that manager out of here now. I want to talk to him. It's actually a manageress. She's quite a nice blonde lassie. Get that baldy Belgian bastard out of here right now. Are you transferring stuff, Alec? Are you maybe projecting stuff? Are you know it's cool and chilled out about this situation as you're trying to make it? And I think other folk are just doing that thing where they go, I think, was it fraud? That's a good one. Fraud and wage thief. Fraud. Wage thieves. We'll never win any with this team. That is the league over. Don't shut the computer then go. You know what I mean? It's we're all just processing it in the way we can. But I think when you add the wave of toxicity that comes towards these players, the guys who are standing in week in, week out, are actually standing up and getting picked for the team, you've just got to say to yourself that it must double the pressure that's on them. It must double the strain that's on them. It must be physically exhausting for them, just knowing that the whole Rangers, everything they have done, is going to get taken away and thrown against. I see people calling Tavernier, he shat out in that European final. He got us to a European final. You know, he stood up and took the first penalty in the kick out and scored it. You know, as a captain's part. What he did in the way that he scored in every single knockout game at Ibrox in that. James Tavernier scored the first goal that night against Leipzig, and John Lundstrom scored the winner, literally put us in a European final. Some of the things that were said to me by fellow fans in the heat of the moment that night, I will keep to myself forever. They were so personal and they were so heartfelt. And everybody openly says that was the greatest night of my life as a Rangers supporter, and it was certainly mine. But they're new wage thieves. That was 2 years ago, Alec, but it doesn't disappear overnight. Do you know what I mean? I don't know how many. I don't think any of the A3 will be coming back next season, because I just don't think it's worth it for them as well as us. But I don't think it's necessarily correct that that's what's going to happen. But I think it's just they're the only thing we can find. We'll get rid of directors, we'll get rid of managers, and now, you know, the captain. They only become the leadership group. They only get that title when we're crap, when we have bad results, because it's like, We're getting the guillotine ready. You're next, I'm going on the block. But after them, it's us. It's you and me. You know, the club are the fans. That was a chat in 2000. The club are the fans. The club are the fans. Well, then let's live up to that. You know what I mean? Let's celebrate the fact that we've got a club. I'm still in that phase, I suppose. But I think it's far too harsh on them, Brian. Far too harsh on them. And I've talked about Tavernier far too often on this pod. Everybody probably who's watched this pod before will know how I feel about James Tavernier. I think he's your Fergus McCann. He will be the subject of documentaries in like 20 years' time. But right now, we don't appreciate it at all.
Yeah, definitely. As if there wasn't enough lashing out at the players after the result on Wednesday, another topic that seemed to get a lot of attention on social media was the manager's post-match comments. He seemed to be trying to protect the players, suggesting that the performance was an improvement on Ross County, on the Ross County defeat. Do you think that was a tactic from the manager, or do you think he was kind of true to open that he was happier with that performance?
If he is happy with that performance, then he does have to go. Aye. But no, it's 100% a tactic, mate. 100% a tactic, Brian. I think it's pretty apparent to most of us that that's exactly what he's doing. And why shouldn't he? Number one, we're all set our Celtic are miles ahead of us. They're 3 points and a few goals ahead of us. You know, they've dropped points as many games this season as we have in the league. You know, they're not as far ahead of us as we might think. They will be if we continue in this vein of form, but their manager got them through their wee spell by being completely, for me, it's total scumbaggery. You know, he's talking about referees, there's a conspiracy, you know, but a VAR, that's kind of implying it. And then he's having to go with the media. I think it was supposed to be that, you know, they've written the story. That's a deliberately enigmatic statement there, Brendan. Could you tell us what you mean? No, I'm not going to, you know, because I want to do this in a kind of huff. I want to do this in a mic slam, kind of a mic drop type fashion. You know what I mean? You know what I mean. Dad, we know you're talking complete bollocks, but can you explain it? No, shut up, Hen. He starts making sexist comments to female reporters and stuff like that. Never, ever slagged his team. Protecting his own job as well. But it now looks like genius. He's distracted. He's taken away from his own players any kind of pressure. And Felix Mont has managed to do that without being in any way, you know, horrible about officials or reporters or anything like that. He just came out and he's continued in the same vein he's been in all season, which is positivity overload. As I've said before, when we lost Sima Abdallah Sima to first AFCON and then injury, he's been sensational. We kind of keep doing it. We're not going to be able to perform. You know, we're not going to be able to do anything after the winter break because we don't have Abdallah Sima. And the manager keeps it, no, positivity. You know, we're only going to focus on the players who are actually fit, not going to focus on the players who are injured. And if you look at our form through February and the way we reacted to every challenge to get closer, to pull back that deficit, to go top of the league, to beat Hearts, then Kilmarnock away while we're top of the league, we come through all that absolutely magnificently. Well, we had the energy, we still had that basis of other players, you know, the with Cortez in there, Yilmaz, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's what he's done the other night with that comment. There's only, in the league, there are 5 games to go. It just would not benefit anybody for the manager to be saying, yous are shite, that was pish. That's basically what folk are wanting to say. You know, we enjoyed the fact that Dujon Sterling did say that. A lot of supporters enjoyed that. But that's not going to work. Especially when, one of my other half-assed theories is, are players finding out just now? Are the negotiations, are the talks been going on about next season? And a lot of them finding out, you're not coming back. Or a lot of them thinking, I don't want to come back. They've told the management and now they're looking at new houses. And I don't know, but I don't think publicly, might have been something that worked in my day when I was younger. And I might quite secretly enjoy to see the manager come in and go, that was crap. And they might, you know, they might have a look at themselves, but I don't think that's the situation. I think they're exhausted and I think they need as much help as they can possibly get. And I totally understand the manager super polishing up that turd the other night.
Yeah, it's an interesting tactic. You mentioned Sterling's post-match comments. They were slightly more critical of the performance. Is it a worry that there's two conflicting messages coming out from manager and player?
I suppose it could be. If you look at the kind of, it's indiscipline or whatever, but the manager, he dealt with that again today. I don't know. Maybe it's even a case of, right, I'll come out and I'll back the team, says the manager, but the fans need to hear from somebody that it's not acceptable. So I'll let Dujon Sterling do it. I don't know. I think I think that Dujon had just come out, spoke his mind. He's obviously a total downer. And I think a lot of fans have found that completely refreshing. I think that's all we need. We just, a lot of us need to hear that the players get how bad it is. As I say, the manager can't do that. So Dujon Sterling has come out and said that. He's a big fella, Dujon. I don't know if he's walking about that dressing room giving it, to Goldson and Tav, user crap. By the way, I would highly doubt it. Because I think, as the manager implied today, very subtly and in a really professional manner, he needs to get his fitness sorted out. Dujon Sterling needs. I think he's made about 30 odd appearances or something for us now this season, and he looks like I would love him to be in the future of Rangers. Dujon Sterling, he looks like a phenomenal prospect. We're in the kind of Calvin Bassey fast track mode when it comes to. I hate saying that because it's two young black guys for the southeast of England. That makes me sound like I'm being racist, basically. I don't mean it. That is just that's what it's the same feeling. It's like this guy, he was a bit tentative at first. He wasn't getting the game time. When he did, it was kind of not making much of an impression. Then suddenly, boom, this guy looks like the future of our club, even if it is just selling him for 40 million in a couple of years. He looks phenomenal. But I think he needs to kind of rein it in. He needs to know his place. And I found it very interesting that he's getting praised by the Rangers support for saying this kind of stuff. Well, not the Rangers support, sorry, the people who react online, you know, and I can't even slag that because if nobody reacted online, they'd be watching this right now. Maybe there isn't anyway. But I feel as if he's been almost held up, like he's been held hostage by the team. There's people saying he better not be silenced or else Clement will be getting it. No, we'll turn on Clement kind of thing. It's like, where did this come from? Connor Goldson, after that League Cup semi-final defeat to Hibs, Connor Goldson, who had been part of the record-breaking British defence 6 months earlier, the greatest title-winning team in Rangers history, better even than the guys who only played 18 games and won them all in 1899-1900 season. You know, he's an absolute legend just for that season alone, Connor Goldson, record-breaking defence, record-breaking British football, unbeaten season winning the league, and unbeaten season in the league. And then 6 months later, he's leading us in a European, he's, you know, at centre-half in a European final for us, only the fifth European final ever played, only 10th in Scottish football's history. But he comes out and he says, that was unacceptable against Hibs, we're absolutely crap. And it's like, how dare he say that? He shouldn't be allowed to say that. People say, he said the game was over. No, what Conor Goldson said in that interview, he was trying to say what he thinks the fans want to hear. And at that point in time, it was true leadership, you know, in that he was standing up on behalf of the management, the temporary management team, with the boys for the, you know, the reserve team and all that. The youth team is were in having to take over because Gerrard had left us in the shit 2-3 days previously before a League Cup semi-final. And he was determined that leadership group, him and Tav, would not let the management team, who'd been shoved in at the last minute, take the blame for him that happened that day. And he just said, he was talking retrospectively. He knows how fans are going to react. If he'd come out and said, we played really well, you know, towards the end of the first half and for the whole of the second half, fans would go, I mean, you're 3-0 done by then. What's the point of performing well once you're 3-0 done? So he just said, but by that point in time, the game's gone. No, I accept that by that point in time, the game was gone. And it's like, he's saying he gave up after half an hour. It just, and it's funny how just the politics, you know, people have loved Philip Clement's press conferences. I still love his press conferences. We've had Michael Beale in that seat doing everything he can to talk about himself. And then you have, or to talk like a manager. And now we've got a manager who just cares about Rangers, who will put his own reputation on the line. Slag me for saying that was a good performance the other night. Protect the players. He just is doing everything he can to keep that team going, to push them towards a title this season, despite everything that's happening. And it's funny how people are suddenly, I don't like him now, I don't like his patter. It's really, it's because we've had a few bad results. Everything changes on results, interpretations. But I think Dujon Sterling, it was quite refreshing in some ways. It was quite funny in some ways as well. It was maybe needed, I think. It was a little bit of pressure out there. Or the players, they get it. It was shite, and that's fine. They know that. But he shouldn't be saying that stuff again. That should be it. We don't think we hear anything else from.
Yeah, no, it was an interesting one. Now, before we go on to talk about the game on Sunday, let me give a shout-out to our friends over at Football Prizes. They are currently running a competition to win a triple signed Rangers shirt signed by Paul Gascoigne, Richard Goff and Graham Souness. For more information on how to enter, visit footballprizes.co.uk/product/triple-Rangers. On the game on Sunday, Alex, Scottish Cup semi-final, Hampden against Hearts. Given recent performances, are you going into this game possibly fearing a bit of the worst?
Yeah, absolutely. Aye, but I think if the form we're in just now continues, Brian, serious chance that we're going out. In fact, if we play like we did on Wednesday night, I would be very surprised if we do anything other than go out probably by half time. But I don't necessarily know that's what's going to happen. I'm always pessimistic. I mean, I kind of protect my emotions before games. The better we're doing, the more I try to point out all the pitfalls. It's just my nature, you know. I never really celebrate a game until it is actually over. You know, I'm the first. It's almost superstitious. I'm on Twitter. If I'm not at the game, if it's an away game, I'm not at it. Yeah, if it's, I'm only at games if it's Ibrox or Hampden, I'll be tweeting Well, we're 3-0 up after half an hour. Well, this is just asking for the big comeback. We take the fit off the gas now. It's going to be really embarrassing when we get beat 4-3. No, and I'm just having a laugh, but also kind of half meaning it as well. But when we're playing poorly, and this is what was it they're saying? Some amazing stats on Sky the other night. Was it 2019 since the last time we failed to win in three games? We failed to win three games in Detroit. What a time to do that, you know? But somehow that actually makes me think, aye. I would be more worried if we were playing really well just now and we're playing Hearts, who we've done well against. We've beat them three times already this season, already at three different venues. I would be thinking, aye, this Hearts are going to upset us. I don't fancy us for the I never fancied us for the Scottish Cup this season. I thought we're going to win the league in the League Cup and maybe Celtic will beat us in the Scottish Cup final to ruin the chances of the treble. That seems like a logical progression from where we've been the past few years. We're not in treble winning territory yet. I also think Hearts look a bit, Shanklin in particular looks a bit magical this season. He's got the kind of icon thing about him when it comes to Hearts. It's almost like he's due a Scottish Cup. He's not going to win the title with Hearts, so it's like the Scottish Cup's the next best thing. And Hearts have got a really good record in the Scottish Cup outside the Old Firm. So I would be more, but I think the fact that we're actually playing so badly just looks like yet another trap that we've set Hearts. So I'm actually more optimistic because we're pish.
That's an interesting way to look at it. Naismith mentioned in his press conference about our current form. Is it fair to say they're probably looking forward to playing us? They're probably enjoying the prospect of playing us in current form.
I hope they're getting to the point where they're cocky. I hope that's what it is. I hope they're looking at us, licking their lips and thinking, yeah, this is the time finally we're going to beat Rangers at Hampden. It wasn't, again, talking about stats, I never realised. It wasn't until after we beat them in the League Cup semi-final this season, somebody just mentioned, and I think since we come back into the top flight, it's been Hearts in two League Cup semi-finals and a Scottish Cup final. We've beaten them three times at Hampden. And somebody said, Hearts have never beaten Rangers at Hampden. And I certainly don't think it's happened. It's not happened in semi-finals or finals of the major competitions. But that I can think of anyway. Sometimes you get a bit of mental block about these things. But I don't know if there's maybe, you know, a charity cup or a wartime cup or something. You know, some down the line, maybe we switched a league fixture. I know we played a few league fixtures at Hampden when we were redeveloping Ibrox in the late 70s, early 80s, but I can't remember. The fact Hearts were terrible at that point in time. They were there doing the lower league, so I don't know. I don't know if I've ever beaten us at Hampden, but maybe just like the thing, if they did this just now, maybe licking the lips thinking Rangers are a wounded animal, let's go for them. But I think having Diamande back, maybe I'm get everything crossed that Yilmaz is going to come back as well. Although what kind of form he's, because he's been out, he's got to that point where he's been out so long that he'll be getting a bit rusty. But things like that, I think it wouldn't take much to maybe give us the hunger again. There's been enough negativity to give us the ability again. I say there's been enough negativity going about to hopefully inspire the players into, if they feel good about themselves, they'll really go for it on Sunday. And I just hope it's another trap we're laying for the Jambos.
You mentioned Diamande back fit now. Do you expect him to come straight back in to line up? Right. What other changes? Are we at the stage now where we're not even going to try and predict the Clement starting 11 or crazy, see any other changes?
It's it'd be nuts to try and predict Big Phil's lineups. But something's just occurred to me, Brian. Sorry, talking about Clement and his press conferences and that. But Michael Beale's last act, talking about this leadership group thing and the criticism that they're getting, Michael Beale's last act, a significant act as a football manager before he get consigned to a wee chair watching a TV screen for Sky Sports, was to blank a guy that he substituted for Sunderland at St Andrews. Just blanked the guy coming off the park, trying to make out he didn't see him, but he was trying to put the blame on him kind of thing for everything that was happening to Sunderland. When Giovanni Van Bronckhorst was under any kind of pressure, the first minute was under any pressure at Ibrox, Beale's up there, he's in the main stand. Was it Livingston we're playing? Aberdeen, can't remember. I think he's up in the main stand, like the ghost at the feast, and he's over at the loud and, you know, just up in his profile, making it known that he's available. He's a guy who would do anything to boost himself. And even he would have known when things were going wrong for him, how many people he would instantly win over by taking the armband off James Tavernier. He would know better than anybody that is a class move. Sorry, a great move for, you know, the manager is taking control. That would get him back up in the popularity ratings. But he, for him not to do that, he must have known that to take Tavernier, take the armband off him, or to take him out of the team would cause such havoc to that Rangers team that it would make his popularity would dip even lower than it already was. So I think if, like some Michael Beale, we talk about all the managers that have had Tav as captain, but I think if you see the way Michael Beale in particular behaved, for him not to take Tavernier out of the game, I think it shows you the innate value that the guy has in the team. All these managers can't be wrong, because not all of them are sacked, you know. But I think on Sunday, Diamandé would go straight back in there. If he's anywhere near fit, he's got to go straight back in there. I think he's been a massive miss. I think he's been the omission too far. We've tipped over the edge after that. Doesn't explain the poor start against Celtic, because he was on the park at that point in time. But I think we've really missed him the past couple of games. And part of me, I was, you know, another half-arse theory, kind of pub bore theory the other night was it Dingwall, was it, you know, finding out, was it John Lundstrom finding out that Diamandé wasn't going to be playing alongside him? He'd have Dowell alongside him after having played in that sitting two with Sterling, Jack, Raskin, you know, all these different players all season. He's finally got somebody that he thinks he's getting on with. Oh no, is that what's deflated him, and that's spread through the team? Everybody knows Bournemouth's chucked it, he's in at left back, and that's totally deflated the whole team. I don't know. I think Diamandé coming back in, hopefully, will give the whole side a lift, because we need something like that happening. And I'm praying that it sounds like Yilmaz isn't going to make it, reading between the lines, but I'm praying that he does.
Hopefully, don't say. Before we finish up, Alex, have you got a score prediction?
If we were flying just now, if we were, you know, 2 or 3 points clear at the top of the table, I would say 3-1 Hearts. But because we're crap just now, I think we're going to win 2-1, and maybe even turning it around from 1-0 down with a couple of second half goals.
My heart can take that, but I would take any win at this point.
That's it, mate.
To be honest. Right, I think we'll call it time there. All that's left me to do is thank my guest, Alex. Thanks as always.
Absolute pleasure, Brian. Thanks, mate.
As well as being live tonight, the show will be available on all podcasting platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Acast, and Stitcher. We're back on Sunday evening to review all of the action from the Cup semi-final. Until next time, bye for now.